Let me lower this, otherwise you'll just see a big dot microphone, a big dot of the microphone instead of my face. Still muted there. Well, it's been good to be with you today. It's definitely a blessing to hear that it's been a blessing to you. I always pray at the beginning of the, when I'm ready to go to a church, that we'll be able to be a blessing to each other, and it has been, so that's good to hear. I'm haven't done anything exceptional, just trying to tell you where I serve and what I do there. But tonight I'm doing something a little bit different. Yeah, there we go. I've said a few times, and you've probably already got the impression, especially if those of you who ask questions in Sunday school, about some of the life in Chad, we even covered some of the things I have in my PowerPoint today. Life in Chad is not always easy, and there are things you have to live without. Some people think that, well, you must be very brave to go and live there. Well, I'm not braver than anyone else. Willing, maybe, but even that didn't necessarily come easily. And I think it came more easily the first time I went to Chad than the second time. And there's a reason for it. My first term in Chad, I've been in Chad for 2 terms. I've been there 8.5 years. My first term was 2013 to 2016. I had a 7-8 month furlough in there. I guess it was a 9 month furlough in 2016. And then I came back to Chad at the end of 2016. And I finished my second term the end of 2020. My first term in Chad, there were two other single missionaries living right next door, basically. Same village where I am. One of them was also doing a very similar ministry to what I'm doing, Bible translation. The other one was in medical ministry. But anytime there was a problem I didn't understand the culture or whatever, I could just go and knock at their door. But in 2016, the Lord moved both of them onward. It's a long story that I won't go into, but it turned out a couple from another field, God had been working in their hearts independently to transfer into Chad. They had no idea the time when they decided to transfer, to declare that they were transferring to Chad, they had no idea that my two co-workers from the first term were even leaving. That had not been announced publicly yet, but the Lord just worked in their hearts to move them to Chad, and so I knew they would be there part of the time. But they're not next door. They're in a town they're about 5 miles away in the center of town, and I'm way out on the edge. And our ministries don't really overlap that much, so I knew we would not, and they weren't, sometimes they've been going on furlough and so on. So we wouldn't be together. I wouldn't have people living next door. And especially initially when I got back from my second term, they weren't there yet. They hadn't transferred yet. And I was afraid of going back alone. And I struggled with it the whole of my last furlough. Not the whole of my last furlough, but certainly the first large portion of it, trying to convince God that I wasn't the right person to send back for the second term. I said, Chad's a hard place. I'm not very experienced. I'd only been in Chad 3 years at that point. I said, you're going to send somebody for 3 years back to Chad by themselves, or, sort of half by themselves, if you consider my coworker, the other missionaries are there part of the time. I don't think I'm cut out for this job. And God won that argument. I don't know how many missionaries God has turned to the story of Moses in the burning bush, but he did. It's like, did Moses think he was cut out for that job? God never said, well, Moses, pat him on the head. Well, Moses, you grew up in Pharaoh's palace. You're okay. You'll do okay. He said, no, it's okay. I'll be with you. I don't care. And when we say I'm not cut out for the job, do we really think God is going to go, oh, I didn't know. I guess I better find someone else then. I mean, he knows everything. It's not like it's a surprise to him. So it's really kind of arrogant on our part, really, when we say I'm not cut out for this job when God is leading us to do something. Because God knows that. But nevertheless, we've all struggled with that, I think, to some extent. But the Lord won that argument. I went back to Chad for a second term, and I wouldn't have exchanged it for anything. But it's not that Chad, being Chad sometimes is always easy. And But one of the things I noticed when I start talking to people about life in Chad, you know, when I was a kid, my parents were missionaries in Australia. When we come back on furlough, people would say, every time we'd start talking about Australia, oh, I've always wanted to go to Australia. Of course, you talk about Australia, and it is a beautiful country and a great place to live. And so it's not very difficult for people to say, oh, that sounds like a great place to be. But, you know, when coming back from Chad, I don't get quite the same response. And, in fact, when I start talking about Chad and what life is like there, the response tends to be, boy, I'm glad God's called you there. I guess he hasn't called me, because I couldn't live with that. And I want to share with you some of the things that I found difficult to adapt to and how God has helped me with them, but I don't want it to end up by everybody going home and saying, boy, she's really brave, and I'm glad God hasn't called me there. I'm sure he hasn't called me there, because that sounds difficult. Well, what if he did? I mean, I'm not the Holy Spirit. I don't know where God is leading all you folks. maybe he's leading you to stay here. Maybe he's leading you into mission ministry somewhere else, another part of the world. I have no idea. I have no idea who's here and what God is doing in your hearts. But what if he did lead you to serve in a place like Chad? And don't just say, I'm going to go hide under my mosquito net for the whole time I'm in Chad. What if he did lead you to go to a place where you had to deal with some of these things? So try to put yourself in my position and not just say, well, go in peace, be warmed and filled, and go to Chad. you never know. God might call you to place where it's difficult, and it could have been difficult for me. So let's move on here. So what would you say if God was leading you, said, I'm leading you to Chad? I don't know if you can see that. That screen's kind of small. Well, that's all right. I'll read it to you. Would you say, well, it's too far away? Would you say, I'm not brave enough? Would you say, I can't imagine living without air conditioning? A lot of people have said that to me. I can't live without chocolate. It's hilarious, but you'd be surprised how many people actually have said that to me. I hope, I'm not, you know, judging their hearts, I hope that's not the real reason they're not going to Chad. Because, I mean, you're going to stand before God and say, I didn't go into missions because I couldn't live without chocolate? I mean, really. Hopefully that's not the reason. But I don't know. People have said this to me. I'm afraid of spiders. People have said this. They don't want to go to the mission field because they're afraid of bugs and spiders. I'll tell you a secret. I'm afraid of spiders. And I'm on the mission field. I'm a picky eater. Can't stand all those foreign foods. I'll tell you another secret. I'm a picky eater. I had a long list. I had a list this long as a kid of all the foods that I didn't want to eat. And my parents had to, you know, sort of force feed me or gently persuade me. I can't learn foreign languages. Yes, you can. I'm not a very adaptable person. Well, you know what? Being adaptable is something you learn. It's not something you're born with. I could never use primitive bathrooms. That sounds weird, but it was one of the things I was afraid of moving to Chad. I'll talk about it in a little bit later. I'm afraid of war, civil unrest. You know, there's a lot of countries where there is a lot of unrest. Yeah, I mean, I was a little bit afraid of nervous about the unrest in America, leaving peaceful Chad and coming to, you know, violent America. So it's not too much of an exaggeration. Or maybe, you know, just afraid in general. You might have other things you could put on this list. So let's look at a few of these things. What about the distance, living in a place very far away? And, you know, Chad is about 6,000 miles from Washington, D.C., and why I picked Washington, D.C., because I didn't want to have to update this slide every time I went to a different city. So just, you know, add whatever the distance is between, where are we, Chicago? Well, we're not Chicago, we're Waukegan, but Northern Illinois is all Chicago to me because I have to drive here. I drive from Maine out to Iowa, so my idea of in the area is very broad. Anyway, whatever the distance is from Waukegan to Washington, D.C., and then about 6,000 miles more. And so that's kind of the distance, but of course you can't fly direct from the U.S. down to Saar, where I live. You have to fly through Europe or to another place in Africa, and then to the capital of Chad, and then down to Saar, where I live. It's quite a journey. So Australia is actually further, but we seem to have more hops to get to where I am going in Chad, so it actually takes just about as long. And I mentioned this morning, some of you weren't in Sunday school, but I just have to put this in somewhere. I'm there in the center of Africa. You don't realize maybe how big Africa is because of the way the maps we're used to looking at distort things. You know, you look at a typical flat map, Greenland looks about the size of Africa. It's really way smaller than Africa. It's way smaller than Australia. It's not that big. I mean, it's a big island, but not that big. It's not as big as Africa. And on the other hand, the countries, the areas in the center of the globe tend to look smaller. And so you don't realize how big Africa really is if you're used to looking at a flat map. If you look at a globe, you might get a little better idea. But the blue there is the continental United States, and all the brown there is Africa. You could fit four of the continental United States in Africa. So very big place. So what if God led you to a place that was far away? Not only far away, you know, in distance, but also far from the capital. You can't fly direct from the U.S. to Sa'ar, where I live. And Sa'ar is 300 miles from the capital by road, 500, because you can't get there the most direct way. And the roads are not interstates. And some of them are not too bad, but the best you get is the equivalent of a rural highway. And sometimes you get a road that you can hardly even drive on. If you take the bus, some parts of the road are so bad that the bus doesn't even bother with the supposedly paved road because most of the asphalt is just completely disintegrated. And they'll just go off into the bush because a dirt road is better than a partly paved road. And that sounds strange, but a partly paved road, when it gets holes, they're very sharp. The edges are very sharp. But a dirt road gets holes and it kind of wears it down a little bit. It's a little bit of a smoother bump. And so it's a little bit easier on your vehicle, and so they'll just drive on the dirt road. And so it takes 20 hours to go those 500 miles. So unless you take the plane, and then it's a one-hour flight, but of course you have to pay for the plane ticket. But, you know, God is with me, I found, even in a place that's far away, whether you're talking counting by distance-wise or by the difficulty it is to get there, God is with me even in a faraway place, and he gives me joy in the place that he puts me. And you ever wonder why missionaries to certain parts of the world are so eager to go back? Do they just love being, you know, having difficulties? No, it's because I really want to be there. God has given us joy in the place where he has put us. God does lead home-loving people to serve in faraway places. My mother, as well as my dad, of course, served for 36 years in Australia. And she always has referred to herself as a homebody, somebody who never wanted to be more than a block from where her parents lived as she went the other side of the world. So God does sometimes call people who are comfortable in their own homes, their own places, to go to faraway places. I'd traveled many places before I'd been to Chad, but not really to less developed countries. I was comfortable in more developed countries. I like my flushing toilets and my air conditioning. But sometimes God leads us even to places that are far away, different, very different from where we grew up. But I found that his grace is sufficient to remind them of his nearness. What if God led you to a place that had no air conditioning? People ask me how hot it is in Chad. The lowest temperature that I've ever seen in Chad was 57. And boy, I felt that was cold. I'm sure you're not very impressed, but I thought that was cold. Usually it doesn't get below the upper 60s. The highest temperature I've ever seen was 121. And there we go. Oh, you can't see that from that far away. But this was, it's probably too small for most of you to see, but this was the temperature one morning during hot season. The hottest time of the year in Chad isn't always this hot. But from March-ish to May-ish is a hot time of the year in Chad. And it's in the triple digits every day, and nights maybe it'll drop into the upper 80s, maybe. For a short time, and then it'll go back into the 90s and soon into the 100s. So one morning, on a Monday morning, I just took a picture of the weather app on my phone, and it said on Monday the high was going to be 115, the low was 87. Tuesday, the high was 110, low was 89. Wednesday, the high was 109, low was 87. Thursday, the high was only 108, and the low was 88. I say, you know you're in Chad in the hot season when you're excited about the temperature going down to 108. And so how do we deal with this kind of temperature? Well, for one thing, the humidity is low. So you heard about, you know, these heat waves in the Northwest. Well, I didn't look at the humidity, but it's probably a lot higher than in Chad. So we might be 110 degrees, but you're looking at like 10% humidity. And if you've never been to a place that has high temperatures and low humidity, you might not realize what a difference that makes. It really does make a difference. And if you have high temperatures and high humidity, humidity is just as important as temperature and how things feel. And so that does help a lot. I drink lots of water. Speaking of which, I get used to drinking a little bit all the time, especially in the hot season. My first hot season, I was dehydrated a lot. And just dehydrated to the point where I'd feel sick to my stomach and have to go lie down for a while. And so my coworker said, you know, just drink a really tall glass of water with every meal, and then that'll help a little bit to get more fluids in, because I would just forget to drink. And in that kind of climate, if you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated. And so you don't want to get to the point where you're really thirsty. And so now I get used to drinking all the time. And so drinking lots of water does help. And I stay in the shade. You know, when it's 115 degrees outside, even the Chadians are suffering, to be honest. It's not an easy thing. But I don't have air conditioning, but I do have electric fans. So that does help. I also have handheld fans. You sort of go like this, you know. And I do adapt to the climate to some extent. You know, in America, you're mostly going from air-conditioned place to air-conditioned place. You're air-conditioned. I mean, when you leave here, you're going to go from this air-conditioned church to your air-conditioned car, and from your air-conditioned car to your air-conditioned home, right? And so you never really are in the heat enough to fully adapt. You just adapt to the air conditioning, not to the actual climate. And in Chad, because I'm actually in the climate, I actually am able to adapt to it rather than if I was going in and out of the air conditioning all the time. And it's still hot, but it actually does help you to adapt a little bit when you're actually in it all the time. And this is my house. Some of you asked about solar panels. These up here in the corner, if you can see those are my solar panels. I didn't want to climb way up there, so I don't have a better picture. But this is a very old house built by missionaries many years ago. And but my house is run on batteries. You know, solar panels aren't what actually charge your house. They charge your batteries. And the house runs off the batteries. But you need a lot more solar panels and a lot more batteries to run an air conditioner. And that's why I don't have an air conditioner. That's the main reason why I don't have an air conditioner. And so that's where we live. But I found that God does lead people to live in extreme climates where you didn't think you could live. I know missionaries in the other kind of extreme, you know, in Siberia or Northern Alaska. I was earlier this year with a pastor who had previously been a missionary in the Canadian Arctic. God sometimes leads people to live in some of these climates that are difficult to live in, but his grace is sufficient to help them adapt to that climate. What if God led you to live in a place without your favorite comforts, whatever those might be? And I just picked out a few. I mentioned chocolate. There is one modern gas station in Saar that sometimes, most of the time, has chocolate. I think you have a choice of Kit Kats, like a regular chocolate bar, the squares, and sometimes they have like a candy bar, a lion candy bar, and that's about it. But apart from that, there's very little chocolate, unless you go up to the capital, but, you know, that's so far away, it almost doesn't count. No cheese. There's cheese in the capital, not down in Saar where we are. No fast food restaurants, which is probably really not that great of a loss when you think about it. The closest thing we have to fast food in Chad are barbecues. In the major towns, they'll get these, where there's a lot of traffic passing through, they'll get these little barbecues, and they'll take goat meat or sometimes chicken or mutton, and they'll grill meat on the grill, and then you can buy it from them. And there it's already grilled, and you can eat it, and they'll usually give you some onions, and sometimes they give you piment, which is like hot powder. Whatever you call that in English, I can't think of it. And that's the closest thing we have to fast food, but not fast food chains. No high-speed internet. This is actually the hardest thing for me, because I kind of like not having to sit there in front of the computer while the stupid little thing is spinning for ages and ages. But so it takes quite a bit of patience. But those are the things. And there's probably other things that could be put on this list, but there's some of your favorite comforts you have to live without. And one thing that helps is just to try not to think too much about it. You sit there and feel sorry for yourself. Well, I guess the best way I can put it is to, you've seen the old movie that was done in, I think, the 60s, of the Swiss Family Robinson, the old Disney movie of Swiss Family Robinson. Toward the end of that movie, there's a point where they've decided they're going to stay on the island, they're not going to go anywhere else, and the mother says, I think we'd just rather stay here, this has all we need, even though there's some things we have to live without. And her husband says, yeah, but it's amazing how unimportant they seem when you don't have people stopping by feeling sorry for you. And so when I don't, sometimes when people ask, what kind of treats are you craving? I'd love to send you a package or whatever. I have to stop and think, I'm sure there's something, because most of the time I don't think about it. And of course, when it's there, I certainly am glad to have chocolate or whatever, but you don't waste time wishing I had those things when they're not there. And God does sometimes lead us to live without certain comforts, but his grace is sufficient to give us all we need. I've found that he not only gives us all we need, but he replaces those comforts he asks us to live without with some amazing things that we never thought we would have. He gives us far more than what we need. He just, maybe we don't live with those comforts, but he gives us other things. What about the scary critters? People ask me about this all the time. Yes, we do have plenty in Chad. We have snakes, and I won't stop to tell you my snake stories because I don't have time, but if you want, I can tell you those afterward. Just get me quickly because I'm not going to spend too long after the service. I need to get home, but I could tell you my snake stories another time, but there's a whole, yeah, this is a cobra. That was my guard there. He's holding a cobra, a dead cobra. And there's a story behind that one that I won't tell. And I've had a few encounters with snakes. Yes, we have scorpions. And we have spiders. And strangely, of all these things, the snakes are deadly. The scorpions are not deadly, but they are extremely painful. The spiders are completely harmless. The spiders are the ones that creep me out. More than the snakes or the scorpions. And this one up here was in my bedroom for about 4 days. And this kind of spider is very fast, and so they're extremely hard to kill. And they usually just end up going to a place where you really don't want them, like your bed, so I just kind of leave them alone. And so I just tucked in my mosquito net very carefully every night. And eventually, he came down and started running laps around my room, and I finally was able to get him. But I've had some things like that. These are some scary critters, and I am afraid of scary spiders. I am afraid of large spiders. But one thing that helps me is to just not think about the ones I can't see. So, like, there's so many places they could be, but if you start thinking about all the places they could be, you will freak out. So if you can't see them, don't worry about it. They could be there, but they could not, maybe they're not, so just don't worry about it. Out of sight, out of mind. And the other thing is, I wear shoes even in the house so that I don't step on a scorpion. Once I discovered a flat scorpion on the floor, so I guess I stepped on him with my shoes, so good thing I wear shoes in the house. it means I go through a lot of sandals, but it means I don't step on scorpions, so this is a good thing. And at night, I carry a flashlight, and if guests come out, Scott Willequit and his group or whoever, they come out, I tell them to use a flashlight at night, even if you're just walking to the bathroom so you don't have any surprises. It only twice in 2 years, in 8 years, have I had snakes inside my house, but it could happen. So, use a flashlight, then you won't step on anything scary. Or at least you'll see it before you do, hopefully. And I trust the Lord to protect me from those critters that are dangerous. You know, you've got some pretty dangerous critters in America if you think about it. God does lead people who are afraid of creepy crawlies to places that have too many of them. Just because you're afraid of creepy crawlies doesn't mean God's not going to lead you to a place that has a lot. I'm afraid of creepy crawlies, and there I am in Chad. But his grace is sufficient to overcome our fear. What if God led you to a place that had strange food? This is a staple food of Chad. The white stuff there on the left is in Chad. It's called boule. In Cameroon, you'd have to ask the Cameroonian families. I think it's called fufu or something over there. They have another name for it. In Chad, it's called boule, and boule just refers to the shape. They put it in a thing like a bowl, and they kind of turn it upside down so when you take it off, it just keeps the dome shape. And that means a bowl, boule means a ball. So it just refers to the dome shape. And this is just a starchy paste. It can be made out of millet or a corn or pois de terre, which is like a chickpea, or rice even. But they'll make this into this paste, and the paste is pretty bland by itself, but they don't eat it by itself. You take a chunk of it, I don't know if you can see this guy, what this guy's doing here. You take a chunk of it, and you roll it into a little ball, and then you dip it in the sauce like this, and you put it to your mouth, and you eat the whole thing like that. So that's the staple food. That's what Chadians will eat every day. There are other things that they eat as well. Pasta, that seemed strange to me when I was first in Chad, but pasta travels well and it's easy to make, so you get a lot of pasta. Couscous, couscous is kind of pasta, but it's kind of more North African. It's kind of like pasta that's really fine, ground really fine, almost like rice, and rice as well. This one was a banquet. I don't know how well you can see that, but this is spaghetti over here. This is like a coleslaw. There's chicken here and potato wedges. So, you know, if it's a special dinner, you can get some really quite good food. But there are some strange items. One of them that I get fairly often, and I always have a hard time with it, is innards. And innards being the various internal organs of animals. And this one was goat intestine. And one time I was one of Scott Willequit. I know you know Scott Willequit, one of his coworkers, Larry Fogel, who'd been to Chad. He grew up in Chad. And we had this dinner, and they had a whole bowl full of various internal organs of, I don't remember, goat or chicken or something. And he started, giving us an anatomy lesson. That's the heart there, and that's the liver, and that's the stomach. And I'm like, Larry, I don't want to know. I have to eat this stuff. You know, afterward, you can tell me what organs they had in there, but not before I'm eating, okay? So, it's not so much the taste. They actually don't taste bad, but they usually don't remove the fat, and so it gets kind of chewy, and that's kind of, but you do your best. And but stranger than that are termites. And these are not the termites you dig out of your wall. They're a specific species. And they're in their life cycle, in the early rainy season, they hatch out of their, they come out of their mounds, and they grow wings. It's a larger termite. It's more like almost the size of a wasp, almost. And they'll grow wings, and they'll come out of their mound, and they will fly around in swarms for a while, and they'll mate or whatever, and then they will fall to the ground, lose their wings, and crawl away. And in the meantime, they're very attracted to light. So if it's at night when they come out, and you have a light on, they will just swarm around your light. And so Chadians will just—they'll just turn a light on, and they'll catch these termites. And yeah, they sometimes eat them raw, but they also will roast them. And only once have I been in a place where I was offered roasted termites, and I could have actually gotten out of it. But I'm like, no, I'll be brave. I will eat these roasted termites. And actually, they taste like bacon. They really don't taste bad. You just kind of have to not look at them, and you convince yourself you're eating bacon bits. But, you know, eating something you don't like never killed anyone. I mean, I always thought cooked spinach was not made for human consumption, but it's not killed me yet. I mean, obviously, if it's poisoned or if it's bad, then that would kill you. But if the only thing wrong with the food is that you don't like it, it's not going to kill you. Just might not make your taste buds happy, but it's not going to kill you. And you know what's wrong with eating insects? Why do we have a problem with this? They're good protein. Just throwing that out there. And, you know, good fellowship is more important than happy taste buds. And so sometimes And it's not easy because I am a picky eater. And there are some things I have a hard time with, but there are some things that are more important than eating our favorite foods. God does lead picky eaters to places with strange food because he has a sense of humor. But his grace is sufficient to enable them to eat even the inedible. What if God led you to live in a place with strange customs? You say, oh, I don't know if I could adapt to those. Well, there might be pagan customs. I don't have time to get into it because it would be a very long discussion. But in Chad, and I don't think they have this, at least not the same thing in Cameroon. Chad, there's historical things that I don't have time to talk about, the reason why it's still there in Chad. It was started to die out. It was revived in the 70s. But this is called initiation, and it's a rite of passage for young men, and it can be it happens every 10 years. So when it's an initiation year, boys anywhere from preteen up till early 20s, or usually mid 20s even, are the main target, and it's a rite of passage, and it's. I can't go into it, but it's extremely pagan. It's very satanic. No Christian should be involved. And unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of social pressure for young men to be involved, and they can be threatened if they choose not to be involved. They can be physically kidnapped and taken to the initiation camps. And if once they get to the initiation camp, if they don't participate, it's basically participate or die once they're out there, because nobody can help them once they're out in the initiation camp. It's in the bush. They can do what they want with them. And it's very sad. There was initiation year just a few years ago. So I didn't see the initiation camps, because if I did, I would be dead. But, you know, I hear about these things. And and there were young men who were determined to not participate and had to basically go into hiding to avoid. And there were pastors who were willing, church leaders who are willing to speak out, which is sadly very few who are willing to speak out, are threatened with death for speaking out against this practice. And you can ask the people. I didn't have time because we were talking about other things, but I've talked to missionaries, American missionaries in Cameroon, and they say they've never seen anything like this there. And so I think it may be kind of a somewhat unique to Chad. Cameroon may have had it in the past, and it died out there, whereas in Chad it was revived in the 70s, and so it's still there. So this is a pagan custom, tremendously pagan, tremendously unbiblical, but it's part of Chadian culture. But there are other things that are really not anything pagan, it's just a different culture. So like this clothing I'm wearing. And if you look at pictures, some of my pictures back there on my table, you see women dressed in very bright coloring. Everybody always comments about the women dressed in bright coloring, very bright clothing. And by the way, the men, too, yep, I don't know how well you can see that, but the men, they're kind of there on the right with the sort of yellow and red outfit. That's a traditional Chadian outfit for men. It sort of looks like pajamas. One of my men coworkers says he loves wearing Chadian traditional clothing because then he can go to church in his pajamas. But anyway, so there are some things like this that are just part of the culture. And you know, they're very modest. There's nothing wrong with this clothes. It's just different from American clothes. And so you try to learn about the culture first. That's the first step. Learn about it first. And then I compare the customs with God's word. You know, every culture has things about it, you know, whether it be Papua New Guinea or the U.S. or Philippines or whatever. Every culture has things in it that are in line with God's word and things that are not. America too. And so we compare these customs, cultural differences, to what does God's word say. And if the customs do not line up with God's word, then I take a stand against them as much as I can. And those that are not against God's word, they're just part of the culture, try to adapt to as much as possible. But you know, even people who never traveled to places that are, you know, very different from their own homes, God sometimes may lead them to places that are different. You know, and like I said, just because you think you're not adaptable, you know, adaptability is something you learn. It's not something you're born with. And the best way to learn it is go and do it. His grace is sufficient to help us learn and adapt. What if God led you to live in a place where people don't speak English or whatever your native language could be? And some of you who have come to America from other countries are like saying, like, I had to learn English to come here. That is really not that difficult. That is really shouldn't keep you from going somewhere. But a lot of Americans really are afraid to go to a place where people don't speak English because they all say, I'm having a hard enough time with English right now. Wish I had a dollar for everyone who said that. People say that to me all the time. But few Chadians speak fluent English. If you're going to live in Chad, you've got to learn French. Or if you're going to North, you can learn Arabic. But in southern Chad, you've got to learn French. You will not get far with English. You will hardly even get through the airport. Just barely might be able to get through the airport because, you know, they have some there who can sort of get by with English. But really won't get much beyond that in Chad with only English. So you need to go to language school, and I mentioned that in Sunday school, so I won't go into that. I spent a whole year in France, and yeah, it's hard to learn another language, especially if you never really learned to speak another language fluently. But no one says you have to get a PhD in the other language. You just have to learn to communicate. There's lots of people who are really bad in languages that have learned to communicate. There's one very dear missionary, he's based in the U.S. now, but he comes back to Chad regularly. His French is atrocious, but he loves the Chadians, and they all love him, and he's a tremendous ministry whenever he's there. And you know, if you speak English, you already speak one of the world's hardest languages. God does lead people who are not good at languages to places where they have to learn another language. But his grace is sufficient to help us learn hard things. What if God led you to live in a place with little modern plumbing? I hesitated to put some of these pictures in here. No, don't worry, there's nothing too bad, but I had to show you what it's like because this was something I was very nervous about going to Chad. I was, how am I going to live? I had always been used to flushing toilets. I'd even been to Africa, other places of Africa before, but always places I had it was like a capital city or some of the slightly more developed countries in Africa, were places where there were flushing toilets and modern plumbing. And I will say, by the way, in case you're wondering, in my own house, I have modern plumbing, okay? But outside of if I go anywhere else, practically anywhere else except my house and maybe the translation office and my coworker's house, apart from those places, I pretty much expect they won't have modern plumbing. So sooner or later, you're going to have to be in a place where you have to use the bathroom and there's no modern plumbing to be had. This is the bathrooms, outhouses, of one of the largest churches in downtown Sar. And inside, this is what you have. Can you see that? It's a hole in the ground, basically. It's all you get. And I was, how in the world am I going to use that? I was afraid of doing that. And if you've lived a significant amount of time in a place where you had to deal with that, it might seem surprising to you that was weird, that was hard for me to adjust to, but it was. Well, I'll tell you, and at least this place has a roof and a door and four walls. Sometimes you don't get a roof. Sometimes you don't get a door. This one is in a town that has a lot of palm trees. Just palm trees are everywhere. And so they put palm leaves on the roofs of their houses. They make their churches out of palm leaves, and they make their outhouses out of palm leaves. So it's just, the walls are just palm leaves all woven together, and there's a little gap in one place. You sort of go in and then turn to the right and hope nobody else wants to use it at the same time because there's no way to shut the door. And sometimes, not only do you not get a roof, and sometimes, not only do you not get a door, sometimes you don't get walls, you get a bush. So, bathroom situations are very different. And this is something that I had a hard time thinking about doing. But I tell you, when you get desperate enough, you don't care. And the fact is that everybody else is in the same situation. You know, it's not like everybody else is using a flushing toilet and I'm the only one using primitive, but everybody's using them. You know, it's just what you do. So it's not shocking to anybody. It might be shocking in the U.S. if I stopped by the side of the road and went behind a bush. But it's not shocking in Chad because that's what everybody does. You know? I mean, really, it's hilarious, but this is one of the things that's hard to adjust to. As a new missionary, it was very hard for me. But and one rule I have is don't touch anything. You know, just a good idea, just a pro tip out there, don't touch anything. And you know, this was way out of my comfort zone. I like my flushing toilets. But God does lead people out of their comfort zones, and his grace is sufficient to help deal with the discomfort. What if God led you to live in a place that is potentially unstable? And Central Africa has a reputation of being unstable. Chad is actually done pretty well in that regard, but it's surrounded by unstable areas. In fact, this picture was just earlier this year shortly after the president was killed, and there were protests because after the president was killed, the military, he'd been there for 30 years, you know, very strong political figure, and looked like he would be there for another 30, but he was killed, and the military took over, which is not the way it's actually supposed to happen, and so there were protests. And, this was, I wasn't there, I was of course on furlough, but it's the most unrest probably I've seen in Chad, at least for a while. And, Chad has a lot of unstable neighbors. To our east, well, Cameroon's actually not too bad, though they have some issues, but then you have Nigeria, and the state of Nigeria that borders on Chad is the state where Boko Haram is based. And if you're not familiar with Boko Haram, they're an infamous terrorist group. And they're kind of like the Al-Qaeda of Central Africa. So they hop over the border sometimes and cause trouble in the border area. You're moving up a little bit. Of course, you have Cameroon. They're not too bad. They're not doing too badly. But then you have Niger. They've had off and on terrorist groups as well. Libya has periodically tried to annex parts of the desert of Chad. I don't know why they want it, but they say they do. So they try to annex parts of Chad and cause trouble. Some of the terrorist groups that have troubled Chad have also come from Libya. To the east, we have Sudan, and the area that borders on Chad is, of course, Darfur. And in the south, you have Central African Republic, which you probably have not heard of in the news, unless you follow a lot of African news, but it's just a mess. It's been in civil war for years, and it's just a mess there as well. And so Chad is in a really unstable part of the world, but it is one of the more stable countries in Central Africa. The bar is not set very high, considering Darfur and Boko Haram and all that, but it is one of the more stable countries in that part of Africa. But there is potential there, that someday it could become unstable. But God can protect me, and he can give me peace. And, sometimes the reason people are afraid is because, the news headlines are only going to tell you when there's a problem. They're not going to tell you about this wonderful village in Central Africa somewhere where there has never been any unrest, because that doesn't make news. They're only going to tell you about the problem. So... So it's not quite as, not every place is a major news headline where there's unrest, God can protect me and give me peace, and also he can give me wisdom. General rule is take reasonable precautions, trust the Lord for the rest. So God does lead people even to potentially unstable countries, but his grace is sufficient to give them wisdom and courage. What if God led you to serve in a place that just seemed hard? Whatever other thing you can think of, put in the blank that you think would be difficult to deal with. In Chad, I've had a lot of challenges and frustrations. Sometimes the culture is difficult to understand. Sometimes I, don't do the right thing that I should do in the culture. Sometimes there's just things don't go the way they should, the way we think they should. But God's grace is sufficient, even in the hard times, even the times when I've been in Chad alone. And God's presence is evident even in the most remote places. And also, I've discovered ministry opportunities I didn't expect. The children of Israel in Egypt. They went through those 10 plagues before they could get out of Egypt. God could have pulled them out there sooner. He could have. Moses was like, God, why didn't you, before the first plague even, he's like, why haven't you let your people go? And God said, just you wait and see what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. But through those 10 plagues, God's power was shown, God's power and glory were shown evident in a way it wouldn't have been otherwise. And through the whole rest of the Old Testament, you know, it's repeated over and over again, I am the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. And it wouldn't have been much of a statement if it hadn't been difficult. So sometimes we see God's glory when it's difficult. And in spite of the cultural differences, even linguistic differences, I found sweet fellowship with my Chadian brothers and sisters. And this term, when I've been by myself quite a bit, it's even been more so because I've been drawn closer to the Chadians this past year with COVID. People couldn't come out. My coworkers were on furlough, so I was by myself, and nobody could come out to Chad. Usually we have people coming and going with BI and PEP and so on, but nobody could come to Chad because of COVID. And so I'm just there with the Chadians. There was 10 weeks in there. I couldn't even communicate by email with anybody. And there were no other missionaries within, I don't know, several hours' drive at least. And, you know, your brother, Christian brother or sister is still your Christian brother and sister, even if they don't speak the same language. So I found that the Lord can provide sweet fellowship. I found joy even amidst the challenges and blessings I could not have imagined. And God sometimes does lead us to serve in hard places. And if you're looking to avoid a hard place, hard times, you're not going to avoid it by staying in America. There are hard times here too. But his grace is sufficient. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. And the word that I love the most in that verse is that he says, I have learned. That means it must have been hard for Paul at first too. He wasn't so adaptable at first, but he learned. If he learned, that means God had to teach him. And that encourages me, because if Paul had to learn it, then God can teach me too. God's grace is sufficient. And I don't know whether God has called you to Chad or to some other part of the world or to stay here. But whatever that may be, wherever that may be, maybe it'll be in Chad. We need missionaries in Chad. But wherever God may call you, I hope that you won't turn it down because you're afraid or because you don't want to live without chocolate. But follow God's leading wherever he may take you, and just see what he may have in store. I wouldn't have exchanged the last few years for anything, even though it's been hard sometimes. I wouldn't have exchanged it for anything. And it was hard to go back and not sure what would happen being sort of by myself, but it's been tremendous. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he will do. Lord willing, in 2 more months, I'll be back, a little more than 2 months, I'll be back in Chad, and see what else the Lord has in store. So it's always an adventure with God, isn't it? All right. Well, I can't believe it, because I've only given this presentation a few times, because this last, this furlough, a lot of churches haven't had, you know, evening services, and so I haven't had time to present an extra thing like this very often this furlough. Usually I get it regularly, but this furlough I haven't had many opportunities, and so I wasn't sure how long it would take, but I haven't gone too much over time, so... I'm going to try not to linger too long after the service because I have to drive home. But so if you have questions, try to hurry them up a little bit so that I can get out of here and get moving.